What is supposed to be a short session of the Oregon legislature gets underway Monday, but for a short session, 5 weeks, the list of bills is growing fairly long. And that list includes something called the Healthy Climate Bill. If you're familiar with climate change legislation generally, this bill apparently bears some resemblance to California's cap-and-trade bill, which passed several years ago as Assembly Bill 32 and survived a repeal vote in an election. Two guests join us. They are both from the Southern Oregon Healthy Climate Coalition, therefore supporters of Oregon's bill. Hannah Soule is the director of Rogue Climate. Welcome back to The Exchange, Hannah.
Thank you.
And Alan Journay is back as well. He's the co-facilitator of Southern Oregon Climate Action Now, which is also just called SOCAN, across his T-shirt, certainly. Alan, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much indeed for inviting us. We really appreciate it.
So essentially, if this is like AB 32 in California, are we talking a cap-and-trade bill here?
Essentially, that's correct. Yes, mm-hmm. It is. What it does is puts some teeth, if you like, into a bill that was passed in 2007 by the Oregon Legislature, which was numbered 3543. Of course, we all remember that, and that set some greenhouse gas emissions reductions targets. Particularly by 2050, we're supposed to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions 75% below 1990 levels. Unfortunately. As the Oregon Global Warming Commission and DEQ have reported, we are not on a trajectory to meet our statewide targets, already established, signed into law. And so what we're doing here is hoping to get passed a bill that will, if you like, put some teeth into that so it becomes a necessary, achievable goal.
Was it just it wasn't an advisory vote. It wasn't a resolution, there was no enforcement. Is that what you're saying?
Back in 2007 when it was passed, no. There were simply goals that were established. The Oregon Global Warming Commission was established to develop a roadmap for achieving those through voluntary means. And that's when the Oregon Climate Change Research Institute was established, interestingly, but no enforcement. And that was the problem. What we're seeing, and we see this again and again, that voluntary measures just don't achieve goals. We can set the most ambitious and reasonable, if you like, goals, and voluntary measures don't put us on a trajectory to achieve them. And so we need something with enforcement in it.
A stick to go with the carrot.
Unfortunately, yes.
Hannah Soule, how far off of our goals are we in achieving what was laid out in that 2007 bill for the state of Oregon?
Alan can probably answer that technical question a little better than I can, but we're definitely not on track to meeting it. And what this bill does is it really provides a path for us to meet those goals and to transition to clean energy. And one of the things that's really great is that the fact that there's 10 other states in the U.S. that already have similar policies, California, and then there's 9 states in the Northeast that have a similar program. And they have shown that this program works successfully and that it creates jobs. In the 9 Northeastern states, they've already created 16,000 jobs in just the first 5 years of their program. So this policy, you know, it helps us deal with our climate change problem, which I'm sure many listeners have seen that we're already starting to see the impacts of climate change on our local businesses, on our quality of life. But it also really helps with our economy and our jobs problem that communities across the state are feeling.
16,000 jobs doing what? How have these jobs been created?
Yeah, in the Northeastern states, most of the money that was generated through this cap and trade program, through the selling of pollution permits, has gone right back into the economy in energy, primarily energy efficiency programs. And so there's lots of construction jobs, renewable energy development jobs, and then all of the associated jobs that have to do with putting new energy efficiency programs in place.
Hannah Soule and Alan Journay are guests on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the Healthy Climate Bill coming before the Oregon Legislature, which starts up its 5-week session on Monday. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, email jx@jeffnet.org. Do you have the technical figures then, Alan, how far we are?
I don't recall the actual. We are, I think it's somewhere about 10 to 20% short on our reductions.
Okay, so let's transition then to the goals that are outlined in the Healthy Climate Act, because those are pretty clear.
Yes. The first target is 20% below 1990 levels by 2025. 45% below 1990 levels by 2035. Those are the midpoints, targeting 75% below those 1990 levels by 2050. So, as I indicated, what this bill does is simply identify exactly the same ultimate target that was in the 2007 bill. So it's not something new. I think that's a critical point. And I think the point that Hannah was making is a really important one, and that is the bill, the way the bill works is nothing novel. It's not an experiment. It has been tried with a great deal of success in, as Hannah mentioned, something like 10 states in the U.S. So folks shouldn't be going into this thinking, oh my goodness, the sky's going to fall. We've tried it. We've seen that it works. It lowers emissions, and as Hannah says again, it does not tank the economy. And we will hear, as we go through the discussion, a lot of fear-mongering that this bill will cause a loss of jobs, a loss of economic growth. And we know from the track record of other states doing this, that is not what happens. We do lower greenhouse gas emissions, and we can see continued economic growth.
Let's talk about the fear-mongering. It doesn't happen in the same way in the Oregon legislature, but you got members of Congress calling it a hoax, writing mm-hmm. books to that effect, bringing in snowballs, it seems like every time it snows in Washington, D.C., when Congress is in session, bringing in glasses of water with ice to demonstrate that, gee, it doesn't overflow when the ice melts.
Yes.
So, I mean, how do you combat an emotional appeal to what is a not emotional kind of subject, or at least you're not trying to portray it that way? Go ahead, Hannah.
Oh. I think that it's important to really focus on the benefits that this bill will provide, which are, you know, economic development with jobs and also protecting our communities from the impacts of climate change. And I think that, you know, even in throughout this state, I think the majority of the population is starting to see the impacts of climate change. We're seeing that it's impacting our local our lives and our economies, and I think the public is ready to start doing something about it and preparing our communities. Already in Talent, they're working on a climate action plan. In the Ashland, communities are coming together for a clean energy and climate action plan. And I think now what we're asking is that the largest polluters also do their fair share as well.
Now, the targets mentioned for the Healthy Climate Act in Oregon, 20% below 1990 levels by 2025, which is just 9 years away, 45% below 1990 levels by 2035, 75% below 1990 levels by 2050. Do these come back to what you were doing in the 2007 bill, but just shove it back a few years, or do they return to those original targets?
No, the final target of 75% below 1990 levels by 2050 is exactly what was in the 2007 bill. So again, this bill does not ask Oregon to do anything more than the Oregon legislature has already asked Oregon to do.
Okay, so what now are the mechanisms? You talked about having teeth in this bill, so what are the things that will force reductions in greenhouse gases?
Well, the bill targets the emitters of greenhouse gas emissions who are responsible for more than 25,000 tons of greenhouse gas emissions, carbon dioxide equivalents, as they're called, have to buy at auction allowances for the pollution that they're going to release. And then at the end of the cycle, they have to hand in those allowances to comply with the bill. And if they don't, then they get a penalty, which is something like they have to pay four times the allowances that they have exceeded the limit.
So you're going to either buy them at auction or you're going to pay a whole lot more if you haven't achieved your goals or have
basically, yes.
Okay, stayed within those. This is similar then to, there are air quality permits that DEQ had, and there were DEQ being the Department of Environmental Quality in Oregon that allowed companies to trade those. In other words, if my factory is putting out a little more than my permit says, I can buy some permit allowance from
Correct.
A factory a few miles away. Is that still in effect in Oregon, Hannah?
Yes. And that's exactly how this program would work. So companies would buy these pollution permits, and it's complicated. So I would encourage people to go to either the Rogue Climate website or the SoCan website if they want to get into more of the details. But what it does is it incentivizes companies to pollute less so that they don't need to buy these permits. And then it also, there's provisions in there that will protect companies who maybe there's not actually a way that they can reduce pollution. And if they're facing direct out-of-state competition, they can actually receive, some companies may be able to receive pollution permits for free so that we don't put Oregon businesses at a competitive disadvantage. So I think that's an important point to recognize.
Is there a marketplace that has yet to be created? Is there one provisioned for in this bill within Oregon, or are we talking about a marketplace that exists somewhere else where all the mechanisms are set up already?
Within the framework of the bill, it's expected that this will happen within Oregon, although it is hoped, we hope, and there are those in the legislature who hope, that once we get it going that we might link well link with California, so we have one large West Coast, including Washington, if they are willing to join. So that would help with the administration of the program. But essentially, yes, the Oregon would have its marketplace of permits.
And how specific does this get, and how much is left to rulemaking by the agencies that have to comply with the law?
Well, interestingly, when we went through HB 3470 in 2015, much of the rulemaking was left to DEQ to fine-tune and develop. But with this bill, it's now 40 pages. I think the last one was 17. So this one is a lot longer, and it actually spells out a lot more of the details than did 3470 last session.
And what's great, though, is that we do have examples to look to. So it's not like Oregon is recreating a system. We can look at California. We can look at the northeastern states. We can look at British Columbia and really learn from their lessons. So in most of those places, they also did a good job of designing the bill so that low-income residents, low-income communities, and small businesses are protected from any potential rate increases. Most places are not seeing a rate increase. But
we're talking power rates?
Yeah, power rates. Mm-hmm. But low-income folks are protected from rate increases through rate credits, and then the money will just continue to go straight back into climate-reducing programs.
We are talking about the Healthy Climate Bill here on the Jefferson Exchange, to be introduced and has been introduced in the Oregon Legislature, which begins meeting for 5 weeks starting Monday. Hannah Soll is with Rogue Climate, Alan Journay with Southern Oregon Climate Action Now. You can join the discussion on the exchange. Your comments and questions are welcome. Give us your thoughts on this issue. 800-838-3760 to talk about climate legislation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We had talked about the carrots, the incentives here now, but so you mentioned some of the sticks already, too, about the fact that you're going to end up, if you end up not sticking within mm-hmm. your guidelines, you have to pay much more than you would have paid for
yes.
the carbon credits. Is there a provision in here that if this continues to get ignored and fines back up at some point, you end up shutting down a company or something like that? Or is that just implied through legal action?
I would guess that's implied through legal action. But I think the point that Hannah's making is a really good one. The whole idea of the bill is not to penalize, but to incentivize, to encourage companies to consider alternatives, to consider renewable energy in their utility portfolios, in their industrial activity, and wherever. Because if you're using renewable energy, then you don't have to buy the allowances, clearly.
And I think, you know, it's clear to see that our economy is already transitioning to clean energy. The utilities are also supporting a bill that will double their renewable energy portfolio standard and get coal out of their mix. And they are showing that they can do that with minimal or, you know, even positive rate benefits for their customers. And so the trend is really that we're transitioning to clean energy. And what this bill does is it just ensures that it happens a little faster, and that businesses are planning ahead, and that our communities are planning ahead, and also are being supported with resources to make that transition happen in a way that works for everybody.
We did talk to the players on the bill I think you were just referring to, mm-hmm. the No Electricity from Coal bill. By 2020, is it, or 2030? I forget. But anyway, sometime in the near future, none of Oregon's electricity will be produced by the burning of coal. Were these developed together, or was it just a happy accident that they ended up in the same legislature same time?
Yeah, it was a happy accident, but they're actually really complementary policies. The coal transition would actually help the Oregon utilities meet their healthy climate benchmarks. Mm-hmm. And the Healthy Climate Bill also applies to transportation and to industry. So it's much more comprehensive, but they work really well together.
So what is the perceived value of Oregon taking on a program like this? I mean, if you're California, there's a strong case to be made because you're the most populous state. You've got 10 times the number of people that Oregon has. You're a major economic power. I mean, how can Oregon, making its measures in its own legislature, have much of an impact on global climate change?
Well, I think that's an important question, and it's one of the questions that we often get asked. You know, surely Oregon's contribution is a very small contribution. But my response to that is, yes, it is. I think the Oregon's contribution to U.S. greenhouse gas emissions is something like 0.9%. It's very small. So it's very small, and it's 0.17% of global emissions. But the key question is, if we in Oregon really want to protect our environment from the ravages of climate change, then we surely should be doing something to address it ourselves, just as we would expect every other state to do it and every other nation on the planet to do it. If we really want to do this, then we can't simply say, well, our contribution is so little that we don't really need to do anything. We can't do that. It's not a reasonable position to hold, and it's not going to encourage anybody else to do anything.
So the second part of the phrase, think globally, act locally.
Yes.
And also, this is a huge economic opportunity. California, by showing their commitment to transitioning to clean energy, has attracted, you know, at least half of the clean energy investment in the country. And I think, you know, again, the point that in the 9 northeastern states, by implementing a similar program, they've created 16,000 jobs. So I think especially rural counties in Oregon have a huge opportunity to create jobs, make our businesses more energy efficient by really committing to transitioning to clean energy and also protecting our communities from climate change.
We'll take a couple more minutes here talking about the Healthy Climate Bill with Hannah Soll and Alan Journay, and you can join the discussion 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned the 16,000 jobs in the northeastern states, Hannah. What about California for job creation under its cap-and-trade bill?
I don't know the complete job creation numbers off the top of my head, but, you know, they're putting a lot of money into rapid transit, into protecting agricultural lands and helping them capture more carbon. And so they've seen a significant amount of job growth as well, especially in you know, revitalizing infrastructure around transportation.
Well, how do you explain this to your age group in particular? I assume you're a millennial, and you know, geezers like Alan and I are going to be gone in a few decades here. But this is
thanks,
this
Jeffrey.
Is, sure, this is the generation that's going to have to live with this. And so how do you explain the basic concept of the bill to people your age?
You know, I think people my age and even people younger really see the urgency of taking action on climate change. It's so important that we, you know, take action now to limit climate pollution, but also that we, you know, find ways to transition our communities to clean energy and protect them from the impacts of climate change. And so when I'm talking to, you know, there's middle school students, high school students, college students who are involved in trying to make this happen this year. And they get it. It's simple. We're limiting climate pollution, and we're figuring out a path for how to transition and to clean energy. So it's a pretty simple concept. And I think that, you know, young people understand that we need to take action, and we need to do it this year. We can't wait until next year.
Alan, thanks for the sense of humor. I withdraw the geezer for you.
Okay, thank you.
I'll keep it for myself. Climate investment funds are part of this whole process, correct?
Climate investment funds?
Isn't that part of what you're talking about?
Yes, here? The income that's generated from the auction of allowances, it variously goes into a number of accounts, and because transportation has specific requirements in Oregon, money raised from transportation has to go towards transportation. So there's a fund established in the Highway Trust Fund, I think it is, which deals with these funds, and then there is a general investment fund for the basic allowance generation funds, and that goes towards helping disadvantaged communities, economically depressed communities, and there's also a transition fund, which is there to help in communities or individuals who are dislocated by the transfer to a.
I noticed
that
it's called the Just Transition.
That's
fund.
It.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And which is not to say it's just a transition fund, but it makes applies some justice.
It's supposed to be like the fair transition fund.
Economic justice, right? Yeah. Why bring this up in this legislative session, which is meant to be essentially housekeeping, things that didn't quite get done last time around? Was there something like this on the table in the 2015 legislature that didn't get anywhere?
There was something like this on the 2015 legislature, so this bill is very similar. So in a way continuing the work that was started last year. And also, the rulemaking process is a long process, and we need to get started on it immediately. And every year that we wait means that it'll just be another year before our state agencies can actually start finalizing the program and getting it running. You know, as it is, this program won't even really start until 2020. And so every year that we wait just means another year that we can't get the program started.
And the trajectory to achieve the 2050 goal then has to become steeper if we are meaning that we really want to do that. So the sooner we start, the easier it is to do it.
Ultimately, I'm sure, and you probably heard this already from potential opponents in the legislature, it does seem to divide along party lines, Democrats for, Republicans against.
Unfortunately, yes.
But between requiring the auction of pollution credits within this bill and the discussion of potentially raising taxes on businesses in Oregon, I'm sure you're getting the business community howling like crazy about this, too. What's the response to that?
Well, I think, of course, there is a body of opposition to any bill like this, which is going to cost companies more money. But I think the important point to recognize is, and Hannah was making this point earlier, that businesses do recognize that it's important to transition to renewable energy, and what this bill is doing is really encouraging them to do it.
All right, the Healthy Climate Bill will be taken up by the Oregon Legislature when it begins business on Monday. At this point, it's identified as LC48. My search could find correlations as well to House Bill 4068 and Senate Bill 1574. So definitely there and on paper and ready to go. And we'll see. We'll actually come back from this break and talk more about the Oregon legislature, about the broader view of what's coming up in this session. I want to thank Hannah Soule from Rogue Climate, Alan Journay from Southern Oregon Climate Action Now for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Thank you very much indeed,
Jeffrey.
Thank you
so much.